Hello. I think we're all here. Huh? Yeah. Oh, we got some more people coming in. Welcome. I hope you had a great conference so far. I hope you enjoy your new toys. You were so lucky to get one. I have to wait till December, so I'm very jealous. My name is Mats Christensen. I'm a program manager on the ASP.NET and Visual Studio web tooling team. And what I do and what my teams do are we're creating all these Visual Studio tools that makes web development so much easier in Visual Studio 2012. And of course, we build all the runtime components in ASP.NET, MVC, Web API, Web Forms, and all related technologies. So today, we're going to look at HTML5. And I get this question quite a lot. Right, should we build this in HTML5 or should we build this in ASP.NET? Right, which technology should I use? Well, that's not really the right question to ask because ASP.NET and HTML5 work very, very well together. In fact, ASP.NET loves HTML5. And I'm going to show you that you can do everything in HTML5 using ASP.NET as your server language and your server platform and runtime. I will leave some room open at the end of the session for questions, but please feel free to kind of just jump in, raise your hand as we go along. Okay? So this is very important. This is the key takeaway for this session. Visual Studio and ASP.NET, we got your back when we're dealing with HTML5. And HTML5, I mean the markup language, the angle brackets, right? CSS3, and all the new JavaScript APIs. We got you covered. So, whoops. I built a website. See here. I have built a website. This is a very, very simple website. You would probably think of this as a user control somewhere. So here's the thing. I want somewhere where my users can upload files, images to be specific, right? This is very, very a common scenario. And here's how this site works. I can browse my images, and I can select one image. I'm just going to take this guy. I'm going to click upload. And this is all it does. It just writes out the name of the actual image right here. So that's not terribly interesting. However, here's my code. What I really want to do is I want to tap in to the new capabilities of HTML5. And I want to do so on my existing app. But this is always the big question. Can I leverage HTML5 and modern browsers in my existing app? And of course, yes. So one of the things that we need to start with is to take this guy and shave off. This is the standard, when you say file new, new file, add new file, you're going to get this doc type in Visual Studio. So we're just going to remove it. We're going to do this. Right now, my document is HTML5. So if you want to be like strictly theoretical about HTML5, that's all you have to do. You're now HTML5. Thank you for showing up. We're going to remove this guy as well. Not that we have to, but because we can. It says style sheet, so I actually don't have to put the type in here. That's pretty nice. Keeps it a little bit more precise, I think. And to the point. Okay, so we have this problem that we can only upload one file at a time, right? That is a big problem. Well, HTML5 has this notion of uploading multiple files. And so what we've done in the framework, and I'm going to start with web forms. There's plenty of stuff for MVC and web pages and the whole ASP.NET family. Remember, there's only one ASP.NET, right? But there's different flavors of them. One of them is web forms. And here's what we did to the file upload. We added something called allow multiple. So let's go back, hit F5. And now I can select more than one. Now the cool thing about this is that old browsers that do not understand this, they still just allow you to pick one file. They don't get a worse scenario or worse experience. For them, it's status quo. But for us, with a modern browser, I'm using IE10 here, I can do this. But you see the problem. It still only gets me one file, right? That's because the server only accepts one file. This is an old app. This is an app that I've had for a while. So I just want to update my code behind. So here's what it looks like. This is very, very simple. If my upload control has files, then response write the file name. But now that we have multiple files, let's see here what we did. So has files. So in ASP.NET 4 and below, it says has file. But now we have has files. We now know that you can have more than one. And then we can actually loop through them. You see here as well, posted file versus posted files. Whoops. So we're just going to do this. Let's build this guy. Let's go back. And hopefully it will write out both when I do this. See? So very, very simply, we can now start to leverage all these new features in our existing application. We didn't break anything, so your old APIs, if you used the singular form of file uploads, that'll still work, as you saw. But you get this nice added benefit here. So that's all good. But since we are working with HTML5, we should probably do some JavaScript as well, because what I really like is that my users that are uploading files, they can actually see the files before they hit the upload button instead of after. So let's add some markup here. I'm going to use output. Output is a new HTML5 element. And basically it just looks like this, because I'm going to write out some output. So this seems like very appropriate for that. It could be any HTML element for that matter. But you saw here you get IntelliSense for HTML5, right? So we actually spent a lot of time. It was actually a huge effort to make sure that all of HTML5 in the HTML editor gets full IntelliSense validation and everything is needed so you can take fully advantage of it. And then we're going to add some script. So I'm going to take some jQuery and pictures. I'm going to add them here. So jQuery is just jQuery. Let's take a look at pictures. So what I'm doing here, at the bottom, I'm saying when the upload control, that's my file upload thing, changes. That means when the user selects files, call the show file method, which just runs through the files and print out the name and the size of the file. So let's try that again. I select multiple, and now it shows it very, very simply. You see the size and you see the file name, right? So the JavaScript actually accesses that information from our hard drive. That's a little bit scary, you might think. It's not. It's perfectly safe. Don't worry. But we want to do more, right? Because this is fine. It would be really nice if we could add the actual images. So let's write some code. So there's a new HTML5 API out there called File Reader. How many here has played around with File Reader? One. Okay. For the rest of you, pay attention. This is awesome. This will work in down-level browsers too. What's the question? No. Okay. So the browser needs to support the APIs that we're talking to. There are some cases where We can use some polyfills like Modernizer and other libraries that will help us, but in this case, they will not. You can use other components instead. So I'm just going to use the... So the idea here is that you take your... Okay. The idea is you have an existing website, right? And you want to add support for modern browsers without older browsers noticing. So that's what we're doing here. So we're going to add a new file reader. You see here you get full IntelliSense. File reader is a HTML5 thing. JavaScript editor gives you full IntelliSense for all these things. And we can now say file reader onload. So that means whenever files are selected, we're going to do some stuff here. We're going to create an image. So let's do that. Whoop. Here we go. And inside this image, we're going to load the bytes. So this is a little bit out of the ordinary. So you see here, from the event that I get here, I actually get full IntelliSense, which is really nice. And I'm just going to take this guy up here, which writes it to that output element that I was adding before into my HTML. And we're going to just stick the image in here. And finally, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to stick it in the F as the parameter. F is the current file, right here. So what I'm doing here now is that I'm creating an image element in HTML for each file that the user selects, and then I am putting that into my output element on my HTML page. So let's run this again. Boom. Just for the fun of it, here's my network. I'm going to clear my network. I'm going to select the two files again. They're displayed, and there is nothing showing up in the network. The server is not involved in this at all. So imagine the kind of power you can actually do on the client. Your server doesn't need to be involved in this at all. This is really powerful stuff. And if you come in with an older browser, they will get the exact same experience as before. And ASP.NET and Visual Studio lets you actually do this very, very easily. Okay. So that was a couple of files, of JavaScript files, and I know it's bad to put jQuery like I did right here. Like, you probably want to serve jQuery from some CDN, from the Ajax CDN or the Google CDN or something. But for the sake of the argument here, I'm just going to use my local jQuery, and I have two JavaScript files, and I want to bundle them into one. Right, because as my app grows, as I add more and more HTML5 JavaScript, I want to make sure that my site is performant, because that is a lot of files to transfer to the client. Imagine you're on a mobile phone on a mountain, maybe with 2G network. Then you don't want to download hundreds and hundreds, potentially, of megabytes of JavaScript. Right? So we want to minify them, and we want to keep them as a single request or as few requests as possible. So for this example, I just want to create a single request out of these two. I want to bundle them together. And there are many ways we can do this. So how many people here use bundling and minification today? Hands up. A good number of you. That's awesome. We know that there are some that have problems with, like, they don't like to do it at runtime, or they don't have a CI server. They can do it at build time. And it can be a little bit complex, you know. How many people here use a runtime component, by the way? Bundling and minify at runtime? Hands up. A handful, okay. Who does it at build time or CI, build server? Who does it statically, manually? One guy. Okay. So as you might know, we do have a component that we shipped in NuGet. I think the first bits came out last year, actually. And it's now, we're going to release an update very soon. It lets you do that through the ASP.NET engine. So that's really powerful. And there's going to be an MS Build task with that as well. So you can completely automate that either at runtime or in MS Build. But there is another way. Because I just want to do this quickly, and I just want to do it statically. I don't necessarily trust the runtime, or I don't necessarily trust my build server. I like to be in control. So it would be pretty nice if I can just click my two JavaScript files that I want to minify and bundle, and then say create JavaScript bundle file. And it says, what do you want to call it? Bundle one, why not? And it's going to create me this file. And see over here what happened. This is my bundle file. This is the XML that you see in here that contains a list of the files. It then has the actual output. Just close this guy. And then it has a min file. And finally, it produces a map file. We're going to get back to that. Now, why is this cool? This is cool because you can check this into your source control. You can completely statically maintain your bundles. So this is a new way of doing it. We have had support for the runtime version. We've had support for the build time version. And now we're going to do it the design time version of it. And if I open the min file, you see here, it's just one long string. If I update my one of the files in my bundle, let me just click save here. You'll see that it's going to tell me, hey, do you want to reload the min file? It's been updated. Right? So whenever any source file changes, the bundle file changes as well. Tooling handles all this for us. So this is really, really interesting, especially for smaller sites or for sites that does not have some sort of automation in the build process. And then what we do is this. Bundle1.min.js. Right. We go back, hit F5, and we now have our bundle file. So instead of two files, we now have one. Okay. That's pretty cool. But what about that map file? Does anyone here know what a .map file is? So I can debug. That's right. So map file, that's a pretty new thing. Source maps. So the problem we always have when we minify and bundle our files is that when we sit in the browser and we want to debug and set breakpoints, for instance, in the JavaScript code, that's very, very difficult when we just have like a minified string where all the variables have been renamed to A, B, C, and so on. So let's just open Chrome here and rerun this guy. So you can see down here, Chrome has the same min file, right? But now take a look at this. It actually has the source files right here. How crazy is that? And I can set a breakpoint. So this is the code that we just wrote. I'm just going to set a breakpoint here. I'm going to choose my two files. And bam. Even though everything was bundled and minified, I can now debug my JavaScript in my source files. So as a web developer, I now go back to having full control, right, over the debugging scenario. This is powerful stuff. Would you have a problem with bundles and version control? Conflicts? Well, if you check them both in at the same time, then it will be the same conflict as any other file that you have multiple people working on at the same time, right?
Almost like a binary.
Sorry?
Would it be almost like a binary?
Almost like a binary. No. And no. Okay, so here's the thing. You can actually, you don't have to actually check any of these map files or any of this into your repository or your CFS or whatever you're using. You can just leave them out there. And anytime you change any of the source files, it just gets auto-generated. So you don't have to deploy this. You can, if you deploy it to your staging machines, to your QA machines, or that in that environments, that should be enough, right? That's enough for you to do the whole debugging. You don't have to deploy it to production. So the source control issue of auto-generating min files and map files on this is the exact same as any other. Imagine that you create an ASPX file. It automatically generates a designer file and a code behind file. It's the same thing. Okay. So source maps is really interesting. So the latest Chrome supports it. You still have to enable it in the settings. Let me just show you that. You actually have to check this checkbox right here, which is not on by default. It will be, I'm sure, at some point. But it's something that will come in all the browsers, I'm very sure of. So another thing we can do is that we can take this CSS file and say, hey, I have one CSS file. I want to minify it. I don't want to bundle it because I have only one. So it would be nice if there was some simple way for me to minify it without hooking up runtime bits or changing my build servers or whatever. So let's find my JavaScript file here. This is a very, very simple file. Whoops. So what we can do is that we can just right-click it and say, minify this CSS file. Boom. Here it is. Let's just change this guy from 10 to 12. Going to save. It's going to say reload, yes. And you see the minified is always up to date. And so the only thing I have to do is this. End of story. Question? Do these tools have a way of doing cache busting? No, not the tooling itself. So what you would want, the problem with referencing static files, as I'm doing right here, is that whenever my file changes, the browser might already have it cached and therefore will not get the changes. Right? This is always a problem with static files. And that's regardless of whether or not you're bundling and minifying them, it's always going to be a problem. So what you can do for that is, so we're using web forms, so you can do this. Scripts.render, and then just put it in here. And that will fingerprint it for you. So scripts, or in this case, styles. And it will automatically fingerprint it. It will put a query string with a version number, which is the MD5 hash of the file. You can use that for anything. If you, let's see here, we have a URL method as well. If you just want the URL without the script tags or the link tags, you can just use the URL. And it will just give you the raw URL. So we got you covered in that section as well, but you need runtime for that. Well, that's an interesting thing. It would be interesting if we can do that through tooling as well, update your references. I will write that down, sir. That's a good idea. It's complex, but it's cool. Okay. Does it make sense, this whole minifying in the tooling? Do you like this? Yeah? Okay. Sorry, I was not looking for applause. I was just looking for feedback, whether or not it was a good thing or not. This is still prototypes, okay? Yes, sir.
Would you recommend using this for the stuff that's built in?
Would I recommend using this over the stuff that's currently built in? And by built in, you mean in the runtime?
Yeah.
The system web optimization stuff? Yeah. No. I would say that they are equally good for whatever, like, if you like the static approach, like what this is, totally go for it. If you prefer not to have the min files in your project, right, if you find that's polluting, then go with the runtime where it all happens at runtime and caching happens at runtime, all those things, then do that. If you want to have static files served, you don't want the runtime involved, but you don't want min files in your project, you should go through a MS build version, right? So those are kind of the three big ones. And it's basically which one you prefer. It's like, it's a personal choice, right? Okay. So this website here, you see, this is actually a lot bigger than just that little file reader thing, right? So let's just take a look at what it actually is. Have you seen this before here on Build? Yes? Okay. So this is the new single page application template, or as I'd prefer to call it, the rich client template. It's a, you can say file new project MVC, and then you can select single page application, and you get this. This is an easy way for you to get started. We are well aware, and we heard all your feedback. How do I actually build single page applications? How do I handle like templating, all those sort of things? It's all in here. And it's all in here. It's using Knockout.js, but it's built in a way that you can just rip out Knockout and put in Ember or Underscore or any other rendering you want. And the same goes for the data layer. We actually wrote the data layer ourselves on top of Web API in JavaScript. If you don't like it, strip it, use something else, use Backbone, use Breeze.js, use whatever you'd like. Okay? I like this effect. That's cool. All right, let's log in. So this is my to-do list. And this is, yeah, let me just demonstrate how this works. So you see, this is completely client-side rendering. All right. Pretty sweet. But there is something that I want to do with this site. I want to add some background color to it. I think the white is like a little too white. So let's take a look at the CSS. Let me just close down all this stuff right here. To-do lists. Here's my CSS. So I like a background color. So let's do that. I'm going to add it right here. So what I already found my image over here. It's like just a gray background thing. I'm going to drag it in. Here we go. Actually, I'm going to do no repeat. Look at get the IntelliSense here. By the way, you might not have noticed this, but this is the first time in Visual Studio you actually get IntelliSense for shorthand properties. So for those of you who are into CSS, that's supposed to be good news. Let's just run this guy. Yikes. It was totally in the wrong place. I didn't want to put it there. I want to put it here. Come on. Here. OK. So it goes up here in the corner, right? That's not the important part. if we look in the browser, let's look at Firefox. We got Firefox here. Let's look at the console here. Boom, we get a lot of stuff here. And we get my image. And that's all good and fine. This is a small image, 180 bytes, right? This is a very small image. This is part of my layout. That means that any page on my website will have this background image loaded. So why do I want to have that extra request? Why do I want to make the browser request the image from the server? What I would like is some way to embed that image into my style sheet. Now, here's the thing. The style sheet itself goes on all my websites. Oh, sorry, all my pages. There is no entry point on my entire website where I do not load my style sheet. Right? So it would be nice if I can take that image and stick into my style sheet so I don't have to make that additional request for the image. That's weird. So what we can do is we can base64 encode our image. Right? This is something, it's a completely standardized thing. It's called a data URI. It's supported in IE8 and above, so it's not a new thing. And it basically allows us to read the bytes from the file, encode them as base64, and stick them directly into my URL function here in CSS. So that's pretty complex stuff, because how do I actually do that? Well, notice this little guy right here. Embed as base64. Okay. So this is 264 characters. Let's just open it up just to see what's going on. Okay. This is a small file. This guy can grow very, very long, okay, depending on the size of the image. And you see here, you get like nice image hover. You can still see the image when I hover over these things. That's pretty nice. And you may not have noticed that it actually also injected this line. So this is for IE 6 and 7. They do not understand this line right here. When IE 6 and 7 sees this line, they just say, hey, I know about the background property. I know this guy. But this over here is gibberish. I'm going to ignore it. That's what IE 6 and 7 will say. So what we're going to do for them is that we're going to keep our image, and we're going to put a little star in front of it. That's a hack. All right? Those are some of the hacks that you need to do every now and again to make sure that your site works in all browsers. We're fully aware of this. And that's why the new CSS editor, which, by the way, is brand new in 2012, completely written from scratch for CSS 3, we're aware of this. We are not doing the old approach anymore where we're saying, if W3C does not know about it, Visual Studio does not know about it. That is the old approach we did. The new approach is, whatever you guys do on a daily basis to make your sites work, we're going to help you. So you'll notice you don't get any squigglies. We're not going to say this is bad, because we know it's good. Well, it's needed, right? Let's call it that. So let me save this guy. We go back here, F5. You'll see the image. No, there's no image anymore. Yet, we still see it up here. So let's inspect this guy. It was on the body, right? Boop. So you see that Firefox completely understands what this is and will show it to us. And it does not display that star background, because Firefox says, I don't know what star background is, so I'm going to ignore it. That's how those hacks work. So that's a pretty nice little trick. Now, here comes the problem. I want to update my image, right? The designer sent me a new background image. I want to update it. And you think, oh, man, right? It's now embedded here. How do I refresh it? How do I get it back into? Do I have to do the whole exercise all over for all my images? That's really annoying. So let's see what we can do about that. First of all, why would we want to update this gray image? Here's a little trick for you. This is all gibberish, right? Well, if you look closer, and you'll see like some patterns repeating. This is, by the way, completely unscientific. This is just what I've been noticing over the years. If you see something repeating, it's usually an A character that's repeated more than once. That means that this file, this image, could be optimized. There are repeating characters that do not have to be there. Okay? So let's say that I just want to optimize my image. I want to strip out unneeded characters, get rid of everything unneeded in the image, like EXIF data, metadata, and so on. But also rearrange like the palettes and all those things inside of it. How do I do that? Well, I open Photoshop, right, or something like that. Spend like 3 gigs of memory doing that. That's not good. So it would be nice if I could just right-click my picture and say, optimize image. Can you all see this? Let's see what happens. Okay. So even though this was a small image, right, 180 bytes, we actually shaved off 17% of it. Imagine this image was 100K or a megabyte. So we just shaved 17% off of this image, lossless. No effect to the quality of the image. This was a PNG. It works with GIF, with animated GIF. It works with JPEGs and so on. So now I have the problem. My image changed, but what about my embedding here? Well, let's see what this guy tells us now. Re-embed data URI. Boom. Did you notice the difference? 224. Let's undo. 264. Re-embed. 224. Right. Easy as that. Okay. Question. Yes, so the question is, what if I have like multiple images that I need to update? Is there a mechanism for me to do it globally, or do I have to go through them individually? I'm going to write that down. This is actually on my backlog, I will tell you. Though I have actually forgotten about that. So that's good. No, so of course the question is no. You have to manually go through this and do them there right now. Can you automatically optimize them through your build process or at runtime, perhaps? Yes, totally. I actually have a plugin that does this, an HTTP handler that does exactly that. If you go on Channel 9, I have a talk where I actually demonstrate that. It's like 20 lines of code. And basically what it does, it just looks through all my images. And if I have an image where I do this, that's a signal to my processor of saying, hey, this image, base64 encoded. Totally doable, because it's just reading the bytes from the image and base64 encoded, like convert to base64, you know that one, right? It's actually super simple. Okay. Let's just save this guy, the optimized guy. Now let's come back. So this is all good. We have what appears to be a post-it, right? And I will tell you this. Don't tell my boss, but originally I had this rotated a little bit, right? Because a post-it, who puts a post-it on a wall like completely straight? No one does that, right? It's always a little bit rotated. And we debated back and forth whether or not the template should have that rotation. And as you can see, I lost. So I think we should bring back the rotation. So my to-do list, that's this guy. This post-it. Oh yeah, by the way, just to get it out of the way, you've seen this a few times, I didn't mention it. Right? You can actually tell which browser supports which. Hey, this is a fun one. Why is Opera on the WebKit one? Who knows? Is this a bug? Yeah? Nope. Opera 12 are aliasing some of the WebKit-specific vendor properties. Because some people, they only use WebKit, and Opera says, hey, even though there are Opera specifics as well, we're just going to support those. We're going to support some of the WebKit ones. So this is actually accurate.
Talk to the Windows Phone guys about doing that.
Can I talk to the Windows Phone guys about doing that? Aliasing WebKit stuff? Yeah. Yeah. So the question is, I'm doing a Windows Phone. A lot when I browse the web from my Windows Phone, a lot of developers only use WebKit, so I actually don't get the full experience on my non-iOS device, basically. Well, the way I see it is, it's bad tooling. Right? The people who wrote those apps, they don't have the tooling, and I'm going to show you what tooling they should have had. Okay. Okay, let's do some rotation. Oops, that was not right. It's called transform. If you look closely here, you see that the icons are a little bit different for some of these elements, right? Some of them have this little snippet thing going on, this scissor. So transform is one of them. I'm going to hit tab, and boom. I'm going to do my rotation. I'm going to give it 5 degrees. Here we go. And I now have all the vendor-specific automatically inserted for me. All right, that's pretty cool. Now it looks like this, and that's actually a bit too much. I think that 2 degrees would have been better. So let's change this. See what's going on here? I change one. They all follow along. Save it. Go back. It changed. All right, so what we've tried to do here is to make sure that when you build websites that uses properties or any other thing in CSS for that matter, we're going to make sure that we're kind of giving you all the vendor specifics because you might not know. Did you know that you needed all 4 vendor specifics for the transform property? Maybe you did, maybe you didn't, right? How many vendor specifics are there for border radius? Hands up. Come on. How many? 3. I mean, yes, that is correct if you count KHTML. Let's just, for the fun of it, do it here. I'm just going to write radius, and it's going to select border radius. So we did a lot of work in how these things filter in your list. So I'm just going to do border radius, and it's going to give me 2. It's going to give me Mozilla and WebKit. Right? IE does not have, there's not an MS1, because IE9 supports border radius natively. IE8 doesn't support it at all. So there is no MS1, but how would you know? Let's add the MS1. What would happen? We'll tell you something is wrong. You don't need this guy. Right? It says, hey. Oh, yeah. So, by the way, I did this, and that's why there's this little weird thing. This is not a valid vendor-specific property, or it may have been deprecated. The Mozilla border radius, I will probably remove in the new year because it's supported in Firefox 4, the standard one. Anyway. Okay, so that's pretty cool. Now let's say that I only did WebKit, right? This is what we see today. I only have WebKit. I get this little error here. What does it say? Browser compatibility, add missing standard property, transform. Okay. So I copy this guy, right? I go down here, do like this. All right, that's awesome. It still complains, and that. It would be nicer if I could just do this. Boom, right? Let the tool do it for me. But it still complains. It says, hey, you are missing Mozilla, MS, and Opera vendor specifics here. What are you doing? And again, I can use control dot, just like in C Sharp for the smart tags. Open it up, add missing vendor specifics, and boom, right? So if you have an existing site, which I assume you do, using our new tools here, we will tell you, and we will make it so easy for you to fix these things. So how do, okay, question. Why didn't it do the second step on the first time? You're not the first person to ask me that question. We might want to do that. Yeah, I have no good answer, actually. Yeah. Yes, sir. I'm going to show you that right now. Okay. Okay. So I'm not going to repeat the question. Instead, I'm going to show you what the question was about. And I'm going to do that with a real-world website. These are real-world CSS files. Do anyone want to volunteer their CSS? Okay. No. I could take, like, Apple or, you know. But I think we should just take our own. So let's take live.com. So this file is actually probably 6 months old. So they might have updated this. I actually don't know. Let's open this guy up and see what's going on. So let me close this guy here. Okay. So this is actual CSS from live.com, which is a so here's a thing in Visual Studio 2012 that is brand new. The error list in CSS is actually useful. You do not have to turn it off anymore, right? Let's take a look. We have 4 errors. It's not too bad. So these are the typical warnings. Look at the third one. It says hand is not a valid value for the cursor property. Consider using pointer instead. Okay? Because this is an actual normal thing. We actually went through live CSS, real world CSS, and said, where is the normal, what are the normal errors? And to put cursor hand is actually a normal error. So we tell you, hey, you should use pointer. Pointer is supported in IE6, by the way. So it's like it's a valid thing to change. But that's not what we're going to look at here, because these errors are all really good. So here's what I did. In 2010, 2008, 2005, I have always disabled any CSS error and warning. I do not want to listen to that, because when I'm doing CSS 3, when I'm doing any other thing that is browser specific, Visual Studio would tell me I'm doing something wrong. Well, I knew better than Visual Studio. So do you, right? So you just turned it off. You do not, I repeat, you do not want to turn off CSS validation in 2012, Visual Studio. It is so good, and it's going to save you. But we have this new thing over here. We actually have messages now, and this is interesting. We don't really use that a lot in Visual Studio, if you noticed. So let's just take a look. It will tell us all the browser-specific problem, browser compat. It will tell us performance. You should use a shorthand notation. It will tell us best practice. You have the same selector appearing twice, the exact same selector. You have some stuff that overrides each other. This is bad. And we have 68 messages. So this is not bad. If I open one of the bigger files, I'm not going to tell you who it is, but some of the bigger, like 400K CSS files, you have over 1,000 of these errors. Over 1,000, that's okay. And now to the question. It would be nice if I can just fix them all just at once. So you right-click, and you say remove duplicate properties. That's always good, right? If you have a display block appearing twice in the same rule, get rid of that. We didn't have any. Oh, we have one, so now we're down to 67. Look how these are numbered, right? 1, 2, 3, it's easy. And you have to do them that way, by the way. Add missing standard property. That's the one we did before where I only had WebKit, but I forgot about just the regular transform property. So let's see if we have any of those. Nope. The live team was good here. So now we're going to add the missing vendor specifics. That's if I forgot a WebKit or an Opera or a new Microsoft one, you know? 36. And then we're going to sort the why is it important to sort our properties? It's important when we're dealing with vendor specifics that the standard property is the last. It should always be the last one. Let's say that I'm Firefox and I read your CSS file and you have transform, and then underneath it you have dash moz transform. Firefox understands both, but they might implement them differently. And the Mozilla, the vendor specific, the dash moz one will override the standard one and give you a different behavior. You'd never want to do that. You always want to fall back to the standard W3C when possible. So let's just sort these guys. And now we're down to 24. So yeah, you can do that at once. And what's really, really interesting is that a lot of these errors, there was just no way to find them before. There was no way. Here's one. The exact same selector is already defined on line 827. Consider consolidating them. Yeah, it's the exact same one as this one, right? We're going to call these things out now. Okay. There's a lot more stuff in this tooling. This tooling is called, so I'll get back to that. This is part of Web Essentials, by the way. I'll get back to that. Let's just save this guy and go back. So all of this CSS is pretty cool. Have you ever considered, instead of writing CSS, then writing less? Hands up. How many here knows what less is? Let me ask that instead. Okay, a good chunk of you. Okay, so let me be brief on what is less. Less is a superset of CSS. Less, any CSS file is a valid less file. For those of you who knows what TypeScript is or have seen it here on build, you know that any TypeScript file is, sorry, any JavaScript file is a valid TypeScript file as well. The same goes with less in CSS. So it would be cool if I could start leveraging less so that I can have variables, I can have like functions within my CSS. We have a question? Yes. So the question is, when will this be available? Let me get back to that. I will not forget that. Don't worry. Okay. So to-do. What if I want to write my to-do, if I want to convert that into less? I want to start using some of the capabilities that less gives me. Well, let's just rename it to less, shall we? Do you want to rename? Yeah. Open it up. Now look at this guy. So now we have less open over here. And we have the compiled CSS. So less compiles down to CSS, just like TypeScript compiles down to JavaScript, just like CoffeeScript compiles down to JavaScript, less compiles into CSS. And this is pretty cool. So now we can actually start working with some less. So one of the things that less is really good at is taking common patterns and moving them into like functions that you can call from wherever you need them. So let's take this transform down here. Let's just get rid of this guy. And let's move it up. This was a rotating transform, right? So let's create a function, or as they're called in less, they're called mixins. And let's call it rotate. And it's going to take a parameter that's going to have the default value of, what should we say, 5 degrees. Okay? And for this, we're going to do, so transform, rotate, degrees. Look here, I get full intelligence. And this is it. And now this complains, I forgot the vendor specifics. Here we go. So whenever I want to use a rotate in any of my CSS, like I want to do here in my to-do list, I can just call this dot rotate mixin. So let's do that. I get full intelligence. It takes a parameter. And so what we can do is that, oh, no, here I want 2 degrees, right? That's what we had before. Here we go. But actually, I want to keep those 2 degrees in a variable. So I can create a variable. I can call it, let's just call it, what should we call it? Rotate. Rotate 2 degrees. This is the variable. And now I can take this variable and I can use it down here. Rotate. Again, full IntelliSense. If I hover it, it will tell me the value, 2 degrees. This is a full-blown less editor. Full-blown less editor. This is not, hey, let's do CSS and do a little bit of features on top of it. This is a brand new language service. This is not just a little trick. This is a full thing. This is a full-fledged native less editor inside Visual Studio. And when I say native, I mean managed. But it's built into Visual Studio. Question?
Would you recommend this approach versus the less runtime?
Okay, good question. Will I recommend that we do this approach instead of using the runtime, like the .less libraries at runtime to do the transform and the compilation of less into CSS? Let me tell you how this works. I think that's a great idea. If you want to do that, then that's fine. But let me show you how I will hook this up to my site. I had on my website, which was, what was this, right here, right? I have I have my to-do list CSS. Okay, that's the one I had. That's the one where we did the rotation before. And now I renamed it to .less. I haven't saved anything yet. But see what happened automatically here. It created the exact file from before. I did not have to update my HTML. I didn't have to update my build process. I didn't have to update anything. But it also gave me a min file. Right? So I get best of both worlds right now, which is really, really awesome. So you can keep doing this. If you want the static approach, do this. If you want to handle everything through build process or any other way, that's fine too. One thing that's cool about this is that it uses the official Less compiler. .less is not official. It is very close to being whatever the official Less compiler is, but it is not. And there is gaps. There are gaps. This has no gaps. This actually uses the official stuff. We're not kidding around. This is the real deal. Okay, so when can you get all this? Well, how many people here use an extension called Web Essentials? A good number of you. Web Essentials is a playground. It is a prototype extension for stuff that we're going to ship inside Visual Studio. You go here, Tools, Extension, and Updates. This is the image optimizer I was using before. Right? That you want this. Yes. And then down here, I have this installed. You just search for Web Essentials. This gives you all of the stuff that I've been showing you. So some of this bundling is pretty new. And let me actually, let's just do this. Web Essentials. So here's how you get it. So this is a playground. This is an unofficial and unsupported extension that is pretty cool with a lot of features. You see the feature list is actually long, right? There's a lot of stuff in here. I didn't even scroll all the way down. So actually, let's just get the latest version up there since we are already here. Have any of you uploaded things to the Visual Studio Gallery before? No? Yes? One person? Okay. So here's how it works. This is 1.6. Next. Blah, blah, blah. Save. Okay. So all the stuff I've been showing you right now, whenever this thing is done loading, is completely available for download. Here we go. It's now out in the wild. And if I go back in here and I look for updates, it should show up. Maybe it takes a little while. So here's a new approach we're doing. Web Essentials is going to be our playground. It's going to be where we test prototypes. It's where we're going to ship a lot of value to you guys very, very often. We have another trick up our sleeves. And I know I only have a couple of minutes left, but we have this guy. You might have been wondering what this is. This is pre-installed in Visual Studio 2012. This extension called Microsoft Web Developer Tools. This is an extension that's pre-installed on all your boxes. This allows us to update JavaScript, HTML, CSS, ASP.NET, all the tooling that we need and that you guys need and that you ask for. So what we're doing with, for instance, the Less editor and the CoffeeScript, so I didn't show you the CoffeeScript, but we have that too. We're going to ship that officially, fully tested, fully supported inside Microsoft Web Developer Tools very soon, right? There was just an update to it the other day, an alpha, and it will go out in December. So you will get a lot of what I've showed you. You will get fully supported by doing nothing. It will automatically pop up saying, hey, there is an update, and you get all this stuff for free. So I need to close. I have 30 seconds, but here's what I need you guys to do. I have heard rumors that evals have not been reported. You haven't been very good at doing your evals. Please do that. Also, if you want to ask questions, come on up. Also, I'm going to be just out the door for an hour. There's like a special brain box, I think they call it. I'll be there for an hour if you have any questions. Okay? So thank you very much for showing up.